The title of this morning's address is Waiting for God, and just to stress that these are my personal thoughts, and I'm amazed at, you know, how the computer's version of God was so like mine. What does that say? In any discussion about the belief in God, it's important to keep in mind that everyone has the version of God they do or do not believe in. And very rarely do we ask anyone, what do you mean by God? We'll say, do you believe in God? And we expect a yes or no. We very rarely say, well, which God do you believe in? Within the Christian tradition, there are three elements of whether or not you believe in God. You're required to believe that God is the creator of the universe. Two, that from time to time, God intervenes in the affairs of humanity. And three, that God will reward or punish us when we die. And those sort of questions about God are also shared by the Muslim tradition. And I don't believe in that God. I'm happy to refer to the energy that initiated the universe as God, so I don't mind using the God word. I do expect that at the end of my physical life, I will go through some process of assessment about my life experiences. So I accept proposition 1 and 3. However, reason makes me reject the idea that God personally intervenes in the affairs of the world. It is these types of reservations that lead many Christian traditions to exclude Unitarians from the Christian family. Unitarian attitudes to God are also causing some tension within the non-subscribing Presbyterian Church of Ireland, to which this church is affiliated. This church became affiliated with the non-subscribing Presbyterian Church in the 1930s. When we joined, we did insert a conscience clause that we felt free to reject or accept any of their beliefs. So we can, in conscience, stay within the NSPCI. But I wonder if today we applied for membership of the NSPCI, whether or not they would accept us as members. Because in the intervening years, this community has developed and changed and now embrace beliefs that are probably outside of even very liberal Christianity. The Bible was once essential to worship in this church. Now it is one resource among many that we use in our services, and it is used less and less frequently. And when we do use the Bible, we approach it as poetry. And when it is used as poetry, it's amazing what we can learn from it, and how we learn how human nature repeats itself over and over again. But we do remember too that the experiences of individuals such as Abraham and Moses were interpreted through their understanding, through their life experiences, and through their ambitions for their nation. In 4,000 years, science has utterly changed how we understand the world. You know, at that time, the people believed in a three-storied world. Down there was hell, up here was earth, and up there was heaven. We know that that is not the way things are. When it comes to creeds and dogmas developed in the 4th century, they fail the test of reason. The Protestant Reformation that put the Bible at the center of Christianity did reinvigorate a Christianity that had become mired in superstition and was suffering the consequences of misuse of power through evil popes. But Protestantism is losing credibility in the face of biblical scholarship. We have to accept what is true. We can't deny and say the Bible is an absolute source of truth when we know it was the work of human beings. We must apply reason and science to ancient scriptures and teachings from whatever tradition, be that Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, or any other faith system. We also need to remind ourselves that science does not have all the answers yet. We learn more and more, and what we learn gives rise to other questions, but we would be foolish to think that science knows everything. And of course, when it comes to understanding humanity, science is only scratching the surface of knowledge. We live with mysteries. All faiths and scriptures can offer us some wisdom about those mysteries. A song goes this, Nick Cave, I think, sang it, "I don't believe in an interventionist God." Well, last week's earthquakes definitely support that position. But why should we expect God to intervene? The events of last week were horrendous, but why should we expect God to intervene? You know, if we're honest, we want God to intervene. We want to do it on our terms. When we want something, we want God to do it. But we don't expect it. We shouldn't expect it. Someone once remarked that for some people, religion and religious life was that from Monday to Saturday, we sow our wild oats. And on Sundays, we go to church and pray that God will organize crop failure for our wild oats. God is the energy force that initiated the universe. That's what I find it easiest to think about. Religions have tended to make God into a Superman figure, one that we can bend to our thinking. Please, God, do that for me. And I think Christianity has really added to that idea of God as Superman by insisting on the divinity of Jesus. And it was interesting that during the week, the Church of England have announced that they're going to explore the possibility of not using male language when speaking of God. And of course, when this is reported, people have to balance, you know, the news has to be balanced. So they asked one priest what he thinks of that. And he said, "Oh no, bad idea. We use God and keep it male as it does in the Bible." And the other guy, more sensibly, said, "Well, God isn't a person. I don't think of him as a person." The other side of this coin is that we mustn't blame God for natural disasters. If there is blame for the more than 28,000 who died last week, it lies with human folly and ignorance, and that inappropriate houses were built on geological fault lines and also on shoddy builders. Watching the rescuers on TV search for survivors, sometimes using their bare hand, to me is a testament of the godness that is within humanity. On the rare occasions when they found someone alive, the shout went up as one voice, "Allah Akbar, God is great. Cynics may ask, why did God not save everyone? But God does not intervene. It was good luck or chance that people survived. It was the work of the rescuers that people survived. The great blessing is that people were found alive and the rescuers felt that need to express their thanks for the gift of a saved life. And they did it in their traditional way. Like, you know, when we say, even non-believers, something good happens, they tend to say, oh, thank God. They never say, oh, thanks. You know, it's just the traditional way. And in the midst of so much death, even one life must have seemed a miracle, something to be thankful for. Last week's earthquake was a reminder of the limits of our power to control the world. We are only part of the world of nature. We are not in control. In the reading this morning, it highlights the reality that often we're not even in control of our own behavior. And again, this is referred to in the same poll. He says, I find myself doing the things I don't want to and not doing the things I want to. I'm sure the gamblers and the alcoholics and other people with addiction say the same thing. In our own lives, even for those who are not challenged with an addiction, we prioritize wealth, success, and fame, thinking that they will bring us happiness. We know they won't. It doesn't stop us from trying, though. We know at the moment that our lifestyle is destroying the planet. But we want somebody else to make the necessary lifestyle changes. We want the planet to live. So we're hoping that God will come along and do something to save us. If we think God only as a superpower ready to save the world, then yes, it's time to let go of that version of God. God is certainly not our Father who lives in the sky. We can think differently about God. We can conceive of God as energy that initiated the universe. And the amazing thing that the universe and everything in it, that includes us, is part of that great creative energy. We are part and parcel of the universe. As Emerson said, we are part and parcel of God. And when we live with this version of God, we are at peace. However, generally, we don't live in harmony with that creative energy. Because the energy that initiated the universe is life-giving, creative, generous, it's liberal. And humans are often destructive, mean-spirited, and insular. When we think of the wonderful gift of creation and what that gives to us, you know, with life in all its forms, and then we think to our reaction when refugees come into our country, and we wonder, are they getting more than we are? That's how mean-spirited we can be. Our lifestyle is destroying life on the planet. Absolutely against that creative spirit. As God did not sweep down like Superman to save the citizens in Turkey and Syria, he won't save us from our self-destructive path either. We are a part and parcel of God. It is we, the God in us, who must act. God is the rescuers who are digging in the rubble. God is found in the people who will donate money to help the survivors live through these cold nights and then hopefully rebuild shattered lives. So God is everywhere, creative, life-giving, and is found in those same deeds found within humanity. In this morning's reading, Luca Bloom talked about the idea of surrender. And when we think about surrender, I think sometimes, as he said, it seems to have a negative connotation for us. Surrender does not mean, well, that's the way the world is. There's a whole heap of misery and things wrong with it, and we surrender to it. It means doing what we can to change that, but then letting go. Sometimes it's hard to let go of, we want something good, what we think is good to happen for someone, but it's hard to let go just to do the deed and then let go. And that's one of the, I think, the drawbacks of religions like Islam that encourages people just to accept everything as God's will rather than saying, that's the way it is, but we can make it better. And particularly Hinduism, you know, in a former life you were miserable to everybody, ergo you should be miserable in this life. You know, it doesn't mean surrendering and accepting does not mean working to make the world better. I think it's worth re-listening to some of Luca Bloom's words. At the beginning of every day, I ask that I be kind. At the end of every day, if I can identify kindness that day, there's peace. I'm not religious, but every day, I ask the God of my non-understanding to make me a channel of your peace. And then I surrender. And I like that phrase, God of my non-understanding. To me, peace is not passive. It involves action, acceptance of life on life's terms, gratitude for life itself, kindness, and surrender. Peace be with you, and God be with you. Amen.